All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type of Vietnam in 1969, helicopter pilot. I think we've got a really interesting program today, and we've got a lot of great guests with us. We're going to be talking a little bit about the documentary, the Ken Burns documentary on Vietnam, and we want to know what you think about that. So if you want to give us a call here on the program, the number is 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600, or you can call it toll free at 844-838-1600. And because we are talking about that, and I'll get to our guest list in just a moment, I think it's important that you watch that program. I've been watching it. I think it's really well done. I think there are some issues, of course, that everybody's going to have with it, you know, that they don't show enough about the good things that we did while we were there. But, you know, everything is political, it seems like. And joining me in the studio today is my good friend here at Veterans Radio, and he's also the director of the Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Services, Michael Smith. Michael, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me back, Dale. It's always good to be on Veterans Radio and talk to our veterans community, and those things that really are near and dear to our heart, and that's how to make sure that they get the care and the benefits that they so richly and honorably deserve.
And that's what Michael's job is, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I think he eats and sleeps VA benefits and how to get them. So Michael's going to be here. We're also going to have on our program Brian Hayes, who's from the he's a public relations director at the Ann Arbor VA. He is going to be here. And also in the second half of the program, we've got Dr. Michael Mann is going to be back on the program again. And he's he was a physician at the San Francisco VA, and he's written a book, not a good book, about the VA, how the VA really fails American veterans. So we're going to get both sides of the story today, positives and negatives, and I think that's also important. But as you know, each week we like to talk about or publicize a veterans organization. And this week, the organization is the Michigan Operation Freedom Outdoors. And our guest on the line right now is Tom Jones. He's off tour and back joining us. Tom, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dale. It's good to be back on.
Well, thank you very much. So I met Tom at a, I guess it was a job fair. I don't know, benefits fair. At the local VFW last week, and found out about a little bit about his organization. So, Tom, tell us about Michigan Operation Freedom Outdoors.
Yeah, for the acronym, we call it MIOFO for short. It's mouthful, but
okay.
You know, it's an extended enlistment date, and you know, a lot of us are seasoned combat veterans that come out to volunteer, and what we're doing is expanding accessible opportunities for folks with health challenges. It's not just a veteran-exclusive organization. It's a continuation of service, and it still gives us that mission to continue to serve for the ones we fought for and fought with.
Well, what is it that you do for veterans specifically?
When they come to me, I send them to Michael Smith and his buddy David Sames, because they're the best in the business. So it's a lot of it. I'm a service officer at the DAV as well, and what we do is we get folks that may be faced with a new disability. You know, a lot of recently returning vets are coming home different than they left.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a little bit of, you know, the camaraderie and just such an organic feel to sometimes open up the doors for other a new approach to therapies or a new approach to recoveries. And then for the civilian population, too, you know, we take people out with MS and cerebral palsy and, you know, just different, the other abled. Make them feel that they can throw that backpack on and go out into public land, and whether it's deer hunting or photography. I mean, we get them equipped with action-tracked wheelchairs for folks with more mobility challenges, and just cut them loose and, you know, welcome them back and reintegrate them to the outdoors.
Well, where are you located, Tom?
Well, we operate out of the Sharonville State Game Area. I have a really strong partnership with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, and they've recognized that what we're doing is working, and the Natural Resource Commission's allocated over 700 acres of public land to us to make accessible only to 100% disabled veterans and individuals with the permit to hunt from a standing vehicle throughout certain times of the year, so we're not putting up with people that are getting back onto the woods. You don't want to throw them on public land to where there's, they wake up and there's a pumpkin patch full of 100 hunters out there. So we have exclusive opportunities, and we're also helping out different counties save money from taxing their residents to do deer culls. So basically, the city of Manchester brought us in, and we're hunting a nature preserve that they were going to tax the residents $80,000 to bring sharpshooters in. We're giving that opportunity to folks that necessarily have those opportunities, and we're filling their freezers.
Oh, all right. So this is located, Veterans Radio broadcasts from Ann Arbor, Michigan. So this is out in Manchester, which is about 25 miles southwest of Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
And you're located, I was looking at a map that came up on your website up there off of Sharon Hollow Road or Sharon Valley Road.
Yeah, there's a state game area right there. It's about 4,600 acres, and they have a public range that we get everyone zeroed in on. And, like I tell everyone, reintegration to the outdoors, not everyone's a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But, I come across people that want to shoot with a camera, and we still get them out there. We're doing, I'm partnered with a lot of great people with the DNR and county parks alike. We have naturalists take people out that know a lot more than I do. So it's sometimes we just do guided tours, and we're going to host a Learn to Hunt program back there where adults are getting back into hunting with Johanna Dart and the Kellogg Biological Center, just to get people out in the outdoors and let them know, what it's all about.
Well, it sounds like a great organization. I'm looking at your website now, and it says that the mission is to provide improved outdoor recreation opportunities for wounded veterans and individuals with health challenges. You have tracked wheelchairs, which we saw at the meeting on Monday, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
People that are, handicapped as far as moving about, they can use these to get out in the woods. And I think
it's any kind of mobility challenge, whether it's someone we have them on hand, and we've also little junior here with me, but we've also
that's all right.
Got I gave them away. We had a DOD contractor buy us one this year and say, we like what you're doing. We want you to do whatever you want with this chair. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And we launched a essay competition, a nomination on Michigan.gov, and had people write in, and we had over 35 applicants, and we threw it to the board and just delivered the first action track chair to Corey Lance, an individual who's an outdoorsman his whole life, took his boys out, civilian, and he jumped off a dock and broke his neck. So now he's able to get further into the woods. Those chairs have a 10-mile charge and marine batteries can get down in the water, and they're a great piece of equipment to break some barriers down.
This sounds like another one of those great organizations that are out there that I'm learning more and more about every week. So if we want to help out, how do we do that, Tom?
Well, there's people ask me all the time, how can I help? And I say, come be a part of camp. Come be a part of the community and the camaraderie out there, and look into your own communities for folks that are struggling to get out, and get a hold of me. I mean, my number's right on the website.
Mm-hmm.
There's other ways. We do have existing volunteers, from rec therapists to, veterans, and they're veterans of, the machine shops, to see what we're doing and reach into the community. But there's a donate button on the page as well, and the address where our home office is. And, it's someone else pays me. This is all volunteer effort. So every dime that comes into my office will go straight to the mission. And I'm real proud to say that.
I think that's one of the best things about the whole thing, is that all the money goes to help. The website is it's an acronym here. It's MIOFO.org.
www.MIOFO. We had to put the I in there to get a little sticky.
MIOFO,
yeah.
Anyway, so go there and check it out. We've been talking with Tom Jones, who is the director of this, a project coordinator, it says here. And Tom is a veteran. He's 101st Airborne Division. So, Tom, thank you very much for your service, and thank you for your continued service to veterans. And I hope to get out there and see you sometime soon.
Yeah, anytime, Dale. We're out there.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So if you've got an organization out there that you would like us to help publicize, please get a hold of us. Just go to our website, veteransradio.net, click on the contact button, and we'll get the message, and we'll try to get you on the air, too. I think it's so important. Michael, when we went to that meeting on Monday, both meetings, but the one especially Monday morning, I didn't realize there were that many organizations that were local that were out there helping veterans.
I really appreciate Congresswoman Debbie Dingell and Congressman Tim Walberg for bringing together, again, a very wonderful and successful Veterans Resource Fair so that, yes, veterans like you and others are made aware of all the different resources that are available to you right here in your home, local community, where you don't have to travel far. It's not governments or government that's too far away or inaccessible. We're right here in your backyard, ready, willing, and able to help and take care of the needs of our veteran community.
Well, that's what we're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
You know, we had each other's backs then, and we've got them now.
And so. I have to give a shout-out to Tom. What a wonderful work he's doing. He's a part of the Veterans Community Action Team Region 9. And we had a kickoff meeting or a regular scheduled, quarterly meeting out at Camp Liberty, out at the facilities where he typically works. And last year, they contacted me about the preserve out in western Washtenaw County. That's a part of the Washtenaw County Natural Areas Preservation Program called the Leonard Preserve. And it had not been hunted for many years, and it was just crawling with deer. And, yes, they saved those taxpayers tons of money by bringing in disabled veterans and gave them two opportunities to hunt, one in October and one during firearm season. And it was a very successful program. And so shout out to Tom and that organization. And the way that they not only work with disabled veterans and getting them back outdoors and active, whether it be hunting or fishing or just walking the trails or taking photography opportunities out there in nature, but they also get other civilians out there who want to be able to enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah. It's a great organization. I know that they're affiliated with a lot of other great organizations in the local area, like the Eisenhower Center, the Brain Injury Association, the Safari Club, Michigan Building and Construction Trade Council, Disabled American Veterans, American League. Everybody's involved in this, and they were able to save the people of southwestern Washtenaw County $80,000 by doing the hunt themselves. So I think that's really kind of neat. So we got to take a quick break here right now, and we're going to be coming back, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the Ken Burns Vietnam War documentary. And if you're having some issues by watching this, I know it may be difficult for some of you. I know it's been a little hard for me in some of the storylines. We've got somebody that can help you out. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that music I borrowed from part of the soundtrack from the Vietnam War film by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. And again, I'm in the studio right now with Michael Smith, who's part of the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office. And joining me on the line right now, I want to bring him in right away. I better do this. Dr. Joseph Boscarino is the PhD, MPH, senior scientist at the Geisinger Center for Health Research in Danville, Pennsylvania. He's a researcher on post-traumatic stress, and he's a U.S. Army veteran himself. And he believes vets should watch this program with caution. So, Dr. Boscarino, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for your PR people contacting me. It was so timely because just before the call, I got a call from a veteran who was a little upset by watching this documentary. And he said, "I don't know what to do. I feel like I have to watch it, but I don't want to watch it because it's really just bringing back so many bad thoughts." Could you comment on that, please, for us?
I completely understand. I'm a trauma researcher myself and a Vietnam veteran. And so I haven't had time this week, but watching the show can be upsetting. And so you have to, watch it with caution and, the usual advice. Avoid alcohol, perhaps watch it with family members or other veterans, things of this nature. But it can, kids, it could make you upset. And if you have a big day tomorrow, you have to work, you may want to think about watching it. You may have difficulty sleeping after mm-hmm. you see the show.
Well, I couldn't understand that because as I was watching it, the night after I kind of binge watched it because I missed the first one, so I watched two of them in a row, and learning all the history of the actual Vietnam, you know, country itself, and then the conflict and all of the mess ups that went on there. One of the comments that somebody made to me was that they didn't feel that the American soldiers, generic soldiers, were being presented in a very positive light. What is your thoughts about that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. It's a very controversial war. Went on for quite a while. I have not had a chance. I saw the first show. I haven't had a chance to see much afterwards because I've been busy traveling. But I could see that. You know, what side do you present? It's complicated. It's been many 50 years ago. So now it should be less controversial. But still, you know, there are going to be people, there are going to be different points of view on the conflict. And some people are going to be upset about it. I mean, you know, I thought I'm a Vietnam veteran myself, as I said, and I felt that we always got the short end of the stick in terms of the media, in terms of you know, our experience and our coverage during the war and afterwards. So I can understand mm-hmm. people being upset about it.
Well, when were you in Vietnam, sir?
I landed in landed with the 1st Cavalry Division. I was in the 71st Artillery Regiment, and we landed in 66 Central Highlands.
Oh, okay. That part I didn't see in your bio. I just saw that you were a veteran, and I thought you were, how can I put this gently, younger. Let's put it that way.
yeah, well, I wish I was. I am in spirit, at least. I try to stay active and whatnot, but, yeah,
well,
not that young anymore.
Yeah, well, then you obviously have the credentials to go along with this. So if somebody is watching this and they are having trouble, I know you mentioned, you know, don't watch it alone, try to watch it with a friend, but what else would you suggest that people do that are having problems with, maybe even with just some post-traumatic stress?
Well, you know, we have very good services available through the VA now. They have, I do a lot of research with veterans in our area, which is Pennsylvania. And we refer when we go through their combat histories and collect all the information, and some vets get stressed out during the interview. These are psychological studies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we refer them. We used to refer them to our Department of Psychiatry because we have a big psychiatry service, but we refer them to the VA. So the VA is available and easy to get on your website and locally, and you can get counseling yourself and family members pretty readily available, and they're pretty good, and so they're out there. So if you're upset, you might want to contact the VA and get some counseling, or they'll give it to you over the phone, or you know, it's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and they will make a referral, you know, meet your needs pretty well, and then they'll, you know, hook you up with a local veteran service rep in your area as well, as I understand it. So pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, one of the concerns that a number of veterans were saying that, you know, as much as they're enjoying the documentary, is that there's no mention of services on the program itself. In other words, when they run the credits at the end, they don't say, you know, if you've had difficulty watching this, go here. It is on their website, just for those of you that are listening. If you do go to the, you know, pbs.org/Vietnam, at the very bottom, if you scroll all the way down, there is a 24-hour help number there for veterans and their families. There's two numbers there. Number one is the VA Vet Center Call Center, and that I think you just mentioned this one, which is 877-927-8387. That's 877-927-8387. It's the word War Vets, and that's their call center. The crisis line, which is on our website, and hopefully most everybody that's involved with helping veterans knows where to find this, is 800-273-8255, and press the number 1. That's 800-273-8255, and press 1. Or you can text the Veterans Crisis Line. I don't know why you would want to do that, but 838-255. 838-255. excuse me. you mentioned that you're doing studies on post-traumatic stress, and Michael and I were talking about this a little bit beforehand, of some of the physical side effects that can result from post-traumatic stress. I know this is kind of blindsiding you, but could you talk to our audience a little bit about that?
Well, you know, the untreated PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, can lead to a lot of problems. Usually you develop anxiety disorders and you become disabled. You know, you develop the re-experiencing over again, the avoidance, your increased arousal, and eventually you become, very anxious, and you have all these other issues that relate to that. You're going to have problems with your family, with work and stuff like that. However, long-term, if that goes on a long period of time, you will start to develop medical problems. We see this happening, and this has been shown that you'd be vulnerable for such things as inflammatory diseases that you wouldn't think would be related to having a psychological disorder, but it does cause increases in inflammation. It does cause self-medication with tobacco and alcohol and drugs, and it does cause like secondary medical problems, which become very serious later in life. Mm-hmm. We know this for a fact now.
And you also mentioned that when you're talking to people that have gone through a post-traumatic or has gone through a stressful event, whether it's a war or it's a car accident or it's a rape or sexual assault or anything like that, You point out that experience never goes away.
Correct. It may never go away. You learn how to manage it, and it can break through. So people go through treatment. They repress. A lot of people repress, or they try to cope well or poorly. They may use alcohol and drugs to cope, which is not a great idea. And in many cases, it does reemerge. If another crisis occurs, I know a lot of vets in New York after 9/11 had, including my poor brother, who was 101st Airborne, had a really horrible experience during his service during the Way City campaign. But he relapsed completely. He was living right down there during the Trade Center attack, and he ended up in the New York City VA hospital for like a month, and complete a breakdown. But so you have to be aware of that, and you have to be careful. And it's certainly, the VA is very good now in helping vets with these problems, but it can. You can get aggravated and reemerge again later on in your life.
Okay. Well, we've been talking here with Dr. Joseph Bascarino, and he is with the Geisinger Center for Health Research out in Danville, Pennsylvania. Is there anything else that you would like to say? I'll give you about 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds, yes. in doing our study, we're doing a study which is funded by DOD, U.S. Army. I'm very appreciative of getting this study. We're doing a large study about nearly 2,000 veterans in our central PA area. The questions that the vets stress out, the Vietnam vets, it's all veterans. It's Vietnam veterans, Persian Gulf, and Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are in the cohort, in the study. The question that people stress out the most over is not the combat exposure question, not the military history question. It's the homecoming question. So the Vietnam veterans were breaking down about how they were treated during their homecoming after deployment. And our interviewers who were doing the survey were like shocked. They're younger people. They said, well, yeah, that's the way it was. It was pretty bad. But they were shocked that the questions about firefights that you're exposed to and seeing dead bodies and whatnot were not really that problematic. It was the questions about how you were treated when you came home. These are grown men that in their 70s, 50 years later, they were breaking down in tears on the phone when these questions were asked. There's a lingering, there are a lot of things that are lingering out there related to that war. And, our interviewers were like shocked at that. I said, yeah, I totally understand that experience. Anyhow, I said, we experienced, and it's still out there, and it's pretty raw yet. So vets should be careful. This is Vietnam vets should be careful and cognizant of these issues when they watch the show, or maybe not watch it. I mean, watch it later on when they feel up to it.
Yeah, I think in one of the episodes I was watching, and I'm going to kind of stretch you out here if you don't mind, is that they were talking about the changing of the draft laws in 65 and 66, and that they went from drafting 10,000 people in 65 to 30,000 a month in 66, and that they were asking colleges to rank their students based on their grade points and give that list to their local draft boards. And I was shocked by that. I mean, I was drafted, and we don't need to go into that part of it. But the idea of that as one issue, and then the second issue, as you mentioned, was coming home. And I know, everybody that I have talked to, the Vietnam veterans who are now, as you mentioned, in our 70s, that anxiety that they had just getting onto a commercial airline and flying to wherever their home place happened to be, what was their reception going to be? And so many of them said that some people didn't even ask.
Right.
So, you know, how do you work that through, I guess? And that's probably why we're still trying to work it through.
That's right. And our young interviewers got to see it firsthand. You know, we interviewed thousands of veterans.
Mm-hmm.
It took us a year to do all the surveys. We'll collect all the data. And our interviewers were going crazy. They couldn't believe it, that these veterans, older men now, they're becoming so emotionally upset over the homecoming question as opposed to the combat question and such.
I'm interested to find out how that goes. We're down to 30 seconds ourselves now. So I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. I got to get this right here. So Dr. Boscarino of the Kaisinger Center for Health Research. I'd love to find out more about your tests that you're giving and what you're looking for as far as your research is concerned, and hope that we can call you and talk to you again.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you. All right.
Thanks.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here at the news. When we come back on the other side, we've got Brian Hayes from the Ann Arbor VA, and we're going to see what's happening at your local VA. So stay tuned. Don't miss out on this. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're back on Veterans Radio. Apologize for the technical difficulties with our Medal of Honor this week. We'll get that fixed by next week. So right now, joining me on the line is our next guest, and this is Brian Hayes. And Brian Hayes is Public Relations Director at the Ann Arbor VA here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Brian, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, Dale. How's it going? Haven't talked to you in a while. Nice to be back.
I know. It's been a whole week since I've seen you.
I know.
So Michael Smith is sitting here with me today.
How are you, Brian?
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good.
So tell me what's going on at the VA today, or VA over the last couple of weeks, and what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, do you think?
Well, we've got quite a bit going on at the VA right now, but, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the documentary. It's kind of been the focus of the show today.
Okay.
And, you know, we at the VA, we kind of started talking about this quite a while before the documentary came out, because we knew that it was going to be big, and it was going to be impactful and kind of an immersive experience. So we've prepared to, talk to folks as they need to. I've had, you know, just working in my office, I have Vietnam veteran friends that work, you know, in the building, and, they've had some effect from just watching the show. You know, they're really not even aware that they're being affected until they realize they haven't slept in 2 days,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're not quite getting to sleep as well as they used to. Or maybe if they have one or two beers after work every day, maybe they're having three, you know, and not really sure why. So those are the kind of things that kind of crop up. So I just wanted to, you know, the good doctor that was on just a couple of minutes ago, I just kind of wanted to bounce off of what he was saying. It's like, hey, if you're feeling something, you're not sure what's happening, we could be picking at those old scabs, make sure you come in and talk to your folks here at the VA, because, we're ready for that conversation.
Right. I want to give out, while you gave me a little cue here, I'll just mention those numbers again for the VA Vet Call Center. And that was 877-927-8387. And, of course, if you feel like you're in crisis, call the Veterans Crisis Line. That's 800-273-8255 and press 1. Don't sit around and think about it. Call somebody. If you're having issues with the program or if something just flashes back in your brain, call a friend. That's what they're out there for.
Yeah, and it really goes hand in hand with our Be There campaign, which is going on right now. You know, September is Suicide Prevention Month,
mm-hmm.
and the VA has a slogan called Be There. It's exactly what it means. Be there for someone. When you're feeling, if you need to talk to someone, go talk to someone. And for people who have friends who are veterans, Vietnam veterans, whatever era veteran, be there for them. Notice the signs.
Mm-hmm.
And just be present. And sometimes it all takes is an ear. You don't really have to say anything.
I think that's really important, Brian, because we sometimes, you know, we're afraid that we're going to hurt somebody's feelings. And I think many times we don't hurt their feelings, and then they do something that we regret for the rest of our lives.
That's right. And it doesn't take long, you know, these you know, folks that have been coming to chat with me, just because I'm their friend, it doesn't take long, and we're just kind of talking cordially about the show, and before long, there's a couple of tears,
mm-hmm.
and they're not sure where those are coming from.
Yeah.
And that's because emotions have a way of coming out whether you like it or not. And, you know, you can suppress and put them away as much as you can, but generally they'll come out at when they're ready. And sometimes it's not the best time. So you know, I don't want to hijack the interview with.
No, that's fine. No, it's something that's important, and it is something that I think that we just have to keep reminding people. And we've got a whole another week of this program is going to be on, and I'm sure that the episodes are probably going to get more and more emotional for a lot of people,
right?
Not just veterans,
I've been riveted to it. It's that was my dad's war. He was in from 66 to 70, Tet Offensive, and a bunch of different other campaigns, and it affected him profoundly. He was never quite he never quite got that after.
Right.
As I'm sure that's almost every veteran's experience.
Mm-hmm.
I was in from. In the early 90s, I was in during Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the Gulf War. So that was an entirely different experience, you
mm-hmm.
know, from the Vietnam War.
Right. Well, let's get back to the VA here. And
so we've got some great stuff going on at the VA. One of the first thing that I really want to get out there is the Fisher House. We know we're getting a Fisher House. If you're not familiar with Fisher House, it's kind of like a Ronald McDonald House for veterans. So, you know, when a veteran has to stay with us for a while, this is a place where they can stay with their family. They're taken care of. Their stuff is there for them to be able to live as long as they need to while they're convalescing or getting surgeries or whatever medical issue they might have. And so we've gotten approved for that. It's actually going to be built. A 16-bedroom Fisher House is going to be built right on our property in the Ann Arbor VA. So you might get a sense of where it's at, sort of a dirt parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Down Fuller Court, you know, Fuller Road is the front of the hospital. Down the side of the hospital is Fuller Court. And if you go down just a little ways, not even a quarter of a mile, on the left-hand side there's kind of an empty lot. And so this beautiful setting where this big Fisher House is going to go with a back porch that goes into the woods, it's just going to be a gorgeous setting. So we're really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Fisher House Michigan is the foundation that's taking care of raising the funds for that. So we're expecting to break ground to have that built in the beginning of 2019, somewhere I think the spring of 2019 we should break ground, and that should be ready to go in 2020. So we're really psyched about that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other great projects we've got going on, you know, I don't know if you know or not, but we finally, you know, built onto that parking ramp. So now we've got parking for everybody.
That's true. You know, we got that wonderful welcome center that I can't wait for that to be done.
Well, and that was the next thing, you know. Everybody's always upset about the parking. You know, you walk in, you're already in a bad mood because you couldn't find a place to park your car. So now that, you know, we sort of took care of that. But the Welcome Center, we had some delays with that because of the way the steel was fabricated. We had to have that redone, and now that's going and getting built, and we're expecting that to open up in the summer of next year. So that's going to be awesome. And I'm hoping to kind of coordinate that with our 65th anniversary celebration, because next year is the 65th year of this VA in Ann Arbor. Been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming, and that's going to be gorgeous. That's 10,000 square feet, and it's going to open up clinic space too. So we're going to be able to take familiar with, like, sort of where the eligibility offices are and where, you know, beneficiary travel and all that right there in that rotunda. Those are all going to be able to move more toward that Welcome Center, and that's going to open up space for us to build more clinic space so we can increase access.
Okay.
Big project, huge project.
Yeah. There are many huge projects that the VA are trying to do, and, you know, in upgrading and modernizing their systems, mm-hmm. and their treatments and so forth. You know, we heard that the secretary of the VA is anticipating his announcement of the additional diseases that were caused by Agent Orange. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, yeah, we should expect something from that fairly soon. The last big announcement we got that was for sure was the Camp Lejeune issue that we talked about, and there are some presumptive illnesses that have come from that, and I think the Agent Orange announcement should be coming. I don't know when that's going to come, but we usually, when it does, it's kind of last minute when with the PR folks. We kind of get things the last, you know, day or two before.
Mm-hmm. Any updates on a change? Any changes in the service levels at the VA here in Ann Arbor and elsewhere, where, you know, maybe you're not so delayed on your appointments or anything along those lines?
Delayed appointments? I'm not sure. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, sometimes you call for an appointment and you get pushed off into the future, or sometimes
access in Ann Arbor is actually really good. We get 96% of our patients in within 30 days. About 87% we're able to get those guys in within about a week. So we do pretty well. And there's just some research that just came out about 2 weeks ago that was published at military.com, picked up by a couple of other tip papers that showed that access at the VA is actually better than private sector by about 24 days. So they did a study with VAs, because VA data is wide. I mean, we measure everything at the VA.
Yes, I know.
The private sector, they don't quite measure as much. So what this group did was they went to 24 of the largest metropolitan areas in the country, and they measured hospital access, private hospital care, and where they showed with the VA to get a primary care appointment, it takes about 5 days-ish, depending on your doctor and stuff. There's some that take a little longer. Some that take a little less. Private sector takes 24 days. So it's something that we've kind of known for a while, and it's been hard for us to get the message out that VA access is actually better than private sector access in many, many clinics. But there are some clinics, I will say, that have problems. Our sleep clinic, that's a long wait, you know. We have a couple other clinics that take a long time, but that's primarily because it's hard to find doctors that do the services.
Mm-hmm.
We have a real shortage of doctors and nurses in the country. It's a real problem.
Mm-hmm. What about, have you heard anything about the choice program for veterans?
Well, the choice program is getting retooled. I don't know if you happen to are aware or not, but Dr. Greenstone, who used to be one of the doctors in our VA, he was actually commandeered into back to D.C., where he's actually one of the primary architects of the new choice program.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're calling it Choice 2.0, for a lack of a better term. But one of the things that's doing, it's a lot of stuff that's going to be involved, a lot of moving parts there. But one of the things that it's doing is returning that scheduling process back to the VA. Because before, you know, when we sent somebody to the Choice program, we sent them off to HealthNet, and HealthNet scheduled them, and they were sort of, okay, you guys take care of this veteran, please.
Right, yeah.
And we just kind of cross our fingers and hope it goes well. Because we don't have the control. What we've done now is we've taken that control back. So the scheduling process is going to belong to the VA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big change, actually.
Okay. Well, that answers a couple of questions. We gotta let you go, Brian. I want to thank you so very much for being on, and hopefully I can get you back on to talk more about what's going on at our local and at VAs across the country.
Anytime, Dale. Thanks for having me on. We'll see you later, Mike.
Take care.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got Dr. Michael Mann, who's going to be on, and he kind of talks about another side of the VA, the way he looks at it. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that song was for our next guest. This is Professor Michael Mann. He's a doctor, a cardiothoracic surgeon, and innovator of genetic and molecular therapies. He's at the University of California, San Francisco. He worked at the San Francisco VA for a number of years, and he's got a little story he likes to talk about with the VA in a book called Mission Betrayed, How the VA Really Fails America's Veterans. And Dr. Mann, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Oh, Dale, thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be back.
Okay, so I just finished your book last night. And I was really upset by some of the things that you were talking about in there. So let's talk about the basic premise of the book, Mission Betrayed.
Absolutely. I wrote the book perhaps more than anything to give voice to the many veterans who are suffering in silence due to poor VA delivery of care. I must say, many of whom really have no idea how their care has been compromised. Finally, people now can read about their stories. But really, I also felt a need to expose a well-concealed truth, and that's that the preservation of the VA bureaucracy has really become a higher priority for the institution than the welfare of the patients, the people that the institution was created to serve.
Right. You mentioned that throughout the book, that the bureaucracy that has been entrenched there for 65 years, very protective of each other, and very protective of the numbers. And I was kind of interested when I heard, you know, Brian was talking about the statistics of, you know, being able to see your doctor faster than on the outside and some of the other things. And I after reading the book, of course, I said, well, I don't know if Dr. Mann's going to agree with those numbers.
Well, hopefully, Dale, after reading the book, I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a little cringe on your end of the line there. Not only has the VA become masterful at creating the statistics that are really intended to deceive, statistics that are really intended to drape a veil of misleading information, the illusion of excellence over what's essentially a system that is accepting and in some cases promoting a mediocrity, which always ends up in substandard care and in patient suffering. But it's worse than that, Dale. I think we talked about this a little bit last time. The statistics have become so important that the welfare and the well-being of the patients is actually sacrificed at times for the benefit of the statistics. I was told not to operate on certain of my patients while I was working at the San Francisco VA, primarily because their operations were felt to be too high a risk of complication and therefore too much of a threat to VA statistics. Those are statistics at the local level and statistics at the national level.
So
this is what people really need to know about the VA if we're going to decide the VA's fate over the next 1 to 2 years.
Did you have a question, Michael?
No.
Okay, I was just Michael's going through all his notes here, wondering where he was going. But the one of the things that I pulled from the book was that you felt that many times at the VA, whether it's intentional or not, is that they would teach their patients more as almost like second-class citizens.
Yes. It's more of an attitude. It's more of a pervasive atmosphere at the VA. Medical students, when they're first introduced to the VA, have an unspoken impression that this is some level beneath the standard of excellence that they're used to at their home institution. And unfortunately, that never goes away. And it's reinforced by the institutional indifference, by the barriers that are thrown by the bureaucracy in the way of practitioners who attempt to deliver excellent care. The result is that people assume that there's a limit to what they're able to do at the VA. So there are some great doctors, wonderful practitioners,
right, yes,
who do work at the VA. And to be honest, I got a chance to listen just now, and your last guest sounds like one of those wonderful people who cares tremendously about veterans and would love to see them get the best. They understand what the mission of the institution is, but what he wasn't telling you, unfortunately, is that everybody who comes to work at the VA eventually accepts that there are limits to what the VA can produce. And I was ashamed as a professor who was coming over to the VA to help out with the care of the vets. I was ashamed when I realized that when I walked in the door of the institution, I donned a double standard. My expectations had to be lower, the expectations of what the system was going to deliver for me and with me, and therefore lower expectations of what I was going to be able to do for my own patients. And that is what results in deadly mistakes, poor care, And again, as I mentioned earlier, sometimes the withholding of care for all of the wrong reasons.
Is this due to, I don't want to just say lack of funding, is it due to the lack of equipment or the lack of sophistication with the equipment and the other nurses and physicians' assistants and so forth? Or is it just...
To be honest, Dale, yeah, my impression, working at the VA, working with administrators, you know, I led a surgical specialty program at the San Francisco VA for about 8 years. I was very close to the hospital leaders and administrators. So I did get a glimpse behind the curtain, if you will. And my sense was it was never a shortage of funds, never a shortage of money. There was always extra money floating around that people would be competing for their own programs at the end of a fiscal year. There are many VA facilities that have state-of-the-art equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that there are these attitudes, and that results, again, in just lowered standards. There's no expectation of the delivery of outstanding care. Instead, there's an expectation of a rather lazy, a lackadaisical pace of work compared to the delivery of healthcare outside of the VA. And that becomes pervasive. It influences everybody's attitude. And unfortunately, the result is that, veterans end up getting not the best possible care that America can produce, but just something better than nothing. And that's really a shame on a national level, that the attitude really tends to devolve into something is much better than nothing.
Dr. Mann, this is again Michael Smith. I'm the director of Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs. And I'd wondered if you could share any of your observations and comments regarding mental health treatment, because that's the area that I touch quite a bit, whether it's my own personal experience or dealing with veterans with whom I'm pursuing disability compensation claims for post-traumatic stress disorder. And what you find is the VA's touting the prolonged exposure therapy, or PET, as being the cure-all for post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's a 12-week episode of care. And then before they go into any other next episodes of care, you have to complete Beating the Blues, either online or in a group setting. And then there's cognitive behavior therapy for depression. Then there's cognitive behavior therapy for anxiety. Then there's cognitive behavior therapy for anger management, or groups for each of those. And what happens in those other iterations or episodes of care is no one's talking about post-traumatic stress disorder after you get through PET. And we, in my office, have had many veterans frustrated with the lack, if you would say, of opportunities to continue to deal with the symptomatology related to their primary diagnosis, because it's almost as if the VA doesn't want to talk about it after that PET therapy.
Well, Michael, this sounds like just yet another perfect example of why the VA is failing. It's a disjointed approach. I must tell you right up front, I'm not an expert in post-traumatic stress disorder, nor even the field of psychiatry, really. I'm a thoracic surgeon. But what you describe sounds painfully familiar, from my own experience in different aspects of delivery of care through the VA, that the ideas are all there. The buzzwords are all there, and sometimes even the systems for implementing those most modern, most advanced concepts of therapy, they're all there. The funding is there, Dale.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it's disjointed, it's not coordinated, because there's no expectation that the vet at the end of all of this is, in reality, the most important part of the system. The most important part of the VA bureaucracy is the bureaucracy itself.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not on the individual level. Folks like Brian, who was just speaking,
right,
obviously care a great deal. They'd love to see the best possible care implemented through the VA. There's no question about that. But what, Michael, what you were talking about is a system. It's an organization of care. It's the concept that we're starting and we're staying focused on the veteran, rather than making sure we can check all the boxes. So what you describe, I can just imagine the checklist that
exactly,
a bureaucrat had. Okay, we've got to have this, we've got to have that, we've got to have this. He went down the checklist, and I'm sure he got his bonus for making sure that all of those elements on the checklist were checked and provided. And yet, what you're experiencing is the veteran at the other end, who should have been the centerpiece of all of this, making sure that individual's experience was being addressed from the very beginning. And instead, unfortunately, it sounds like a lot of our veterans, after even participating in this program, may still be at great risk for suicide or, you know, other very, you know, very horrible downstream effects of PTSD, that with a more integrated system, just a better, more comprehensive approach could have been addressed early.
All right, we're down to 3 minutes already. I wanted to get more into this. So what suggestions would you have for fixing the system? We're talking with Dr. Michael Mann. His book is entitled Mission Betrayed, How the VA Really Fails American Veterans. And we all have horror stories and some great stories. But how would you go about fixing this, Dr. Mann?
Well, we've got to put the veterans at the center of what the VA is supposed to be doing. Right now, they're so far at the periphery that their best interest is not only sometimes unrecognizable, but as I mentioned earlier, I was told as a surgeon to withhold life-saving care from some of my patients because the institution might have suffered as a result. So what we've got to do is really gut that system, in my opinion. There, as you know, was a huge effort by our federal government to look at the problems of the VA, and the Commission on Care came back and said there has to be a major transformation of the VA in order for this concept to work. And yet the piecemeal approach that our government is actually taking, of course, protecting whistleblowers is important, but that's not going to change the core failings of this institution. It's not going to change what we were just describing that end up in veterans committing suicide, some of my patients ending up dead in their beds on a VA ward because the nurses just didn't know how to read their EKG monitors. Those are the types of failings that are only going to be addressed when we make the entire institution once again accountable to excellence rather than, you know, some sort of bureaucratic system.
Well, I strongly encourage you out there, all of our listeners out there, to read this book. It's going to be very upsetting to you. Trust me, it will be. But we can also, it's the only way we're going to change something is when we find out what is wrong with it. And Michael's got the Commission on Care in here in front of us. And I know that you had inside of your book, there are many comments from the Coburn Commission on you know, what was wrong with the VA. So I want to thank you for bringing this to the forefront. And it'll be up to us and other veterans that are listening to this program to keep it, you know, keep this whole thing alive and make sure we make the VA a better place.
Yes, we really, Dale, you're absolutely right. We really need to take this opportunity. And I do encourage people, if they care about veterans' health care, to read the book, to read the stories of the people who are suffering because of the failings of the VA, but also get an inkling of why.
Absolutely.
You know, how the VA is protecting itself from real criticism. And that's the only pathway toward real transformation.
All right. We got to go. Thank you very much, Dr. Mann. We'll have you back on again. Next week, we got Joe Galloway on to talk about the Vietnam documentary. So until then, you are dismissed.